Welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. I'm sorry, the countdown's made us chuckle again. I don't, it's two middle-aged men just engrossed by the countdown on the screen. And also, Kieran, I just noticed you don't get four. It just goes five, pause, three, two, one. So, which is...
We got the cheap version of the software, I think.
Of course we have. We got the cheapest version of the software. It's questions day, Kieran. First question, how was Rome, notwithstanding the result, of course?
Rome was an amazing experience. I went via Florence because the flights directly to Rome were so expensive. So we went on Italian trains, which was superb. Went on trams, taxis. I was invited to Roma's training facilities to meet some of their guys on the day of the match, and they were fantastic hosts. And I spent a couple of hours there with them, going through all sort of nerdy things in terms of data, analytics, finances. So yeah, absolutely brilliant experience. It was a horrible to hear about what happened to one of my fellow fans. Fair play to him. He turned up with a child's crutch. there was originally a little bit of sympathy, and yeah, typical terrorist response of there's fuck all wrong with you. Within 5 minutes of him raising his crutch, and people got bored of being nice to him.
You sent me the photo. I have to say, he looked quite chipper for someone who was supposed to have been the victim of that. I got dumped in Florence once.
Oh no!
By a girl who suggested that we meet up. She was travelling around Europe. She said, "Why don't we meet in Florence?" And I went to Florence, and she, for the express intention of her dumping me, which is like, so it's always been the less romantic city in my eyes than it has been. I can't even watch the Magic Roundabout, Kieran, as it brings back such unhappy memories. Google that one, kids. You'll be chuckling away later on. It's questions day, Kieran. As I say, we have some questions, obviously. It's Sunday morning now. You're coming down to earth with a bump with a home game against Nottingham Forest, I believe, today. So I'll be looking for you to do us a favour. What's that? Is 2 o'clock kickoff?
2 o'clock kickoff. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well,
then I've got to go straight from there to Liverpool to go to work.
Can you go straight from Brighton to Liverpool on a Sunday afternoon?
It's a long and convoluted journey, but I'll get there. Okay. I'll get there.
We'll all get there in the end, Kieran, like the end of this pod, which has now taken about 6 unnecessary minutes to get started. Our first question, Kieran, comes from Jamie Walmsley. Jamie says, do clubs have to let scouts into their ground? And if so, do they have to pay, or are there agreements across the leagues? Naturally, you only see so much on TV, which is why teams send scouts and managers to watch opposition. But could a club simply refuse an opposing scout entry to the game? I suppose, especially if you've got a sold-out stadium, Kieran. I think the answer is no to that question, but I don't know whether scouts have to pay to get in.
Well, I spoke to our secret scout. We've got a huge line of people wanting to join our legion of snitches. And it's, I have to use the word legion as I've just been to Rome. I was very impressed by Rome that the manhole covers have SPQR on them as well, which was absolutely made up when I saw that. Yeah, it was sort of the juvenile in me was very taken aback.
You know the famous Rachel Hayhoe Flint quote, you know, the England's legendary women cricketer back in the day.
Rachel. Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody once asked her if there was a female equivalent of the box that female cricketers wore. And she said, yes, we do. We do have protective covering for the genital area. And this chap said, oh, what do you call it? And she said, we call it the manhole cover. which still makes me chuckle. I know, it's great. Why are we discussing Roman manhole covers, Kieran? What's, What's happened to this? This is why we're not getting the BAFTA here. We haven't mentioned the BAFTA for a while. Where? Anyway, so you're in Rome. You're watching, looking at the manhole covers.
I'm in Rome. I get in touch with our secret scout.
Yes.
Now, he or she, no, we don't want to give the game away, said there's no formal rule or relationship between clubs, but there is effectively an unwritten agreement that if there are seats available or if there is room available, then scouts can attend. And it is usually free. The seats tend to be in the hospitality area because I think clubs want to be seen to be nice. You know, and there's a bit of one-upmanship, you know, because if we're mean to your scouts, then you might be mean to ours. So, yeah, there's a bit of positive karma there. The benefits of allowing scouts in, and you might say, you know, we could be playing this club in a few weeks, is that the scouts are normally there to recruit or, you know, looking for potential recruits. So you're giving a person who might be buying one of your products, and we must remember, of course, these are young men in their careers, you're maximising the number of eyeballs in terms of who can see them. If it's a big match, so yeah, we're recording this on the Sunday. Liverpool versus Manchester City is taking place this afternoon. I would imagine every single scout in the country would love to be at that match. So yeah, Liverpool will be getting they'll be getting a request from Darlington and Torquay and so on. So what tends to be the case is that if it is a big match, there will be somebody appointed at the club to effectively do a filtering exercise. So if we take a look at Arsenal, for example, you know, the secret scout said that what they quite often do, especially for matches that are being sold out, is that they will say, we will only allow scouts in for perhaps the next three opponents. And everybody said, that's reasonable. Yeah, you know, we can't have 200 people rocking up, especially as they are sort of hospitality area seats, and you know, we know how valuable those are. So that's the position. Quite often the scouts don't stay the 90 minutes because they've seen all they want to see within the first 70 or 80, and they want to get away, and they've not got that emotional investment as far as the result is concerned, because they're there to look at a particular player or a particular position or a particular style of play which is undertaken by the clubs in question, rather than the final result. So that, you know, to go back to Jamie's original question, they don't pay the if it's not going to be sold out, then as many scouts who want to attend can normally attend. The higher up you go, the greater the demand, the greater the care that needs to be taken as to who can actually physically see these matches.
It's one of the things that always made me laugh about playing Sunday football, Kieran, back in the day, was that everyone playing was convinced that the shady-looking bloke hiding behind a tree was definitely a scout. Although why he would be scouting on Tooting Met Common at the level of football we were playing is far more likely to be urinating on the said tree after coming home.
or not coming home.
Yeah. So the fact that it's looking, it's like you say, you're 29, lads. Come on. If you were going to be scouting, you would have been picked up by now. Anthony Granderson has our next question. It's an interesting one, Kieran. Mm. And Anthony says, do you know what the biggest loss in revenue a club has suffered due to a controversial player or controversial incident involving a player, such as Rafe Rovers and David Goodwillie, Sheffield United and Ched Evans, and Liverpool and Luis Suarez? And I don't think we need to go into the details of those individual cases, but you know, this happens from time to time that a player is involved in an incident and the club loses his services for some time. So I presume you've got a spreadsheet, have you, Kieran? A wrong'uns spreadsheet?
Well, I do have a wrong'uns spreadsheet. Now, as far as gate receipts and incidents involving players are concerned, I've taken a look through, and I can't see any negative impact because
Okay.
Normally, it's the relationship is between the fan base and the shirt. Now, occasionally, you might run the risk of losing a sponsor.
Right.
Because the sponsors say that if you're going to continue to employ that player, that means that there's a set of values that will become associated with the club, rightly or wrongly, that we don't want to be associated with ourselves. So that's the position there. If, however, we look at it upon a slightly broader scale, we come to Blackpool FC and the Oyston family. Now, what we can see there, and again, I'm not going to go into the details of the people involved, is that the Oyston family were viewed very negatively by the Blackpool fan base for a variety of reasons, involving both their conduct as owners and off-field conduct. And therefore, Blackpool fans made the utmost sacrifice, and a significant number of them decided that they were going to join what we refer to as the Not a Penny More campaign. And as a result of that, they stopped attending matches. They certainly stopped buying merchandise. They stopped buying catering. And that meant that Blackpool's match day income went from around about £2.5 million a year to £600,000. So it was a three quarters drop in match day revenue. The Oystons subsequently left the club. There are new owners. There is a feel good factor around the club. And in 2022. Match day revenue. Remember, we are coming out of COVID here, so you can't compare it directly to the previous one or two seasons. But if we compare it to the position whilst the owners were in charge, the Oystons, and pre-COVID, in the first season of the feel-good factor, match day revenue went up to 4.6 million. So I think it can show that if there is someone or something which is toxic related to the club, fans will get organised. And this was a fantastic campaign by the Blackpool fans. And, you know, I got to know one or two of them, you know, through social media and so on. And they hated it. You know, they want to support their team. But it's that ongoing challenge of, you know, and we've seen this at Southend and West Bromwich Albion and Reading and so on. You want to support the team, but not the regime. And what the Blackpool fans did was the ultimate sacrifice. And it's the same, you know, I know sort of former fans of, well, no, they're still fans of Manchester United, but some of the lads that went to form FC United of Manchester as a protest against the culture of the club, which changed very much as a consequence of the Glazer family acquiring one of the most famous football teams on the planet.
Yeah, I suppose as well, Kieran, the difficulty of answering Anthony's question is it's hard to quantify, because what tends to happen if there's a controversial player or controversial incident is that you lose the services of the player for some period of time, and you can't quantify what your results may have been if that player had been in your team. And it may or may not cause relegation. So it's quite difficult to actually pin down the amount of money. You can probably tell the amount of money the player loses because you can just work out which part of his salary is not being paid. But it's quite a difficult question to answer from Anthony. It's a good one, though. This next question, Kieran, should be easier to answer because it's all lovely facts and figures. Right? It's not the question after that, Kieran. I was cheered up on your behalf. I can't wait to ask you the question after that.
Yeah, you can make sure to cup up on that one, can't you?
Yeah. but this one comes from Nicholas Andrews Gauvain. Although Nicholas is spelled in the French way, so perhaps I should be saying Nicolas Andrew Gauvain. Nicholas says, now that the playoff games in the FA Women's National League have been scrapped, what are the likely financial impacts on clubs in the FAWNL?
Right. If we go back to 2023, where the playoffs did take place, and this was between Watford and Forest, the attendance there was 3,000, and that was the match taking place at MK Dons. If I'm honest, you know, there won't have been any significant broadcast revenue as far as that match was concerned. And by the time you deduct the costs of hosting the game, I don't think either side will have earned or taken home very much money. So we are looking here at tier three of the women's game. And for people not familiar with the FA Women's National League, this is this sits below the WSL and the Championship. And to get promoted, we have both a Northern and a Southern Premier League, and then you've got national leagues below that as well. So the winners of the Northern League and the Southern League used to play each other with regards to a one promotion place. I'm not sure of the rules, I must confess. I've not looked at the rules for 23-24. So I don't think there would have been a financial hit as such. What was interesting was looking at the level of attendances in that particular competition, and following the success of the Lionesses in winning the Euros and the increased profile, yeah, crowds have gone up. Now, they're going up from a low base, but they're going up. We've got clubs such as Newcastle this season who are averaging around about 3,000, and that's in the third tier. So there is a positive direction. I think there's still broader issues in terms of football at that level, in terms of both supply of the talent pool and demand for the games. But it's heading in the right direction.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miroboard. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miroboard?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
This question, Kieran, comes from Robert Curtis. Now, I don't know where Robert lives, but if it's anywhere near South London, I'm just saying, Robert, get in touch and I'll buy you a pint in the Norbury Wetherspoons, because I imagine Friday morning when I saw this question, I was thinking, oh, Kieran won't be happy. He'll be on the plane. He had a 4-hour delay going out. He'll be flying back from Rome. He'll be a bit miserable because he's had a great experience, but he's seen his club hammered, humiliated, wrecked. Kieran needs something to cheer him up. And then this pops up from Robert Curtis. Oh, that's going to cheer Kieran up. It's like Christmas, Easter, all his birthdays coming at once. Robert's question, my question, says Robert, is about amortising a player who's then sent on loan. Should the buying club be able to get a loan fee that is in excess of the amortisation amount? And how would that be registered in the books? Would it be a profit on disposal or registered as other income? I'll be back in 5 minutes with a cup of tea, Kieran. I presume you'll have finished by then.
Yes, just about. With regards to this, if you buy a player and for whatever reason things don't work out, or you've bought a player and the intention is, yeah, that player's quite young, we've bought them, we want them to get a little bit of experience elsewhere before bringing them into the first team. you have to look at the price that's being paid for the player. So if we take, for example, the case of Chelsea signing Romelu Lukaku, he was bought on a 5-year deal. A magnificent player. He absolutely bullied us on Thursday night. Held the ball up superbly, superb in the air, a constant threat. There's two Lukakus. There's the Lukaku who is the round peg in the round hole, and he just looks magnificent. And then there's the other Lukaku for a side which isn't set up to play to his strengths, and he does look like it's just not working out for him. And that was the case at Chelsea. So they bought him for £97.5 million. And now that was on a 5-year contract, which means that you would be amortising him just under £20 million a year. At the end of the first season, it hadn't been good. And therefore, Chelsea decided to put him out on loan. And I think that could be the case potentially for the remainder of his contract. And the reason why that's likely to be the case is that he's on a fantastic contract at Chelsea. You know, he's on an estimated £300,000 a week. Are you going to find a club in Italy or Spain willing to pay that? No. So therefore, what happens is that Chelsea put him out on loan. They'll be probably getting a loan fee of £7 to £8 million a year. The buying clubs, you know, which he's now at Roma, of course, they'll be paying, I think they're paying half his wages. And that means that the value of Romelu Lukaku in Chelsea's books is far too high. And therefore, they have to go and put through what we refer to as an impairment. Now, an impairment is where the value of the player in the books, which is cost less amortization, is greater than what you could expect to sell him for. So at the end of the first year, you know, Lukaku's value in the books would have been around about £88 million. We don't know to which player this referred to, but Chelsea wrote down player values by £76 million at the end of 21-22. I suspect a substantial amount of that actually refers to Romelu Lukaku. And then they amortise upon the remaining value. So there's no profit on disposal as such, but the loan fee is treated as other income. Chelsea are actually very good at the way that they disclose this. Arsenal are very good. With other clubs, from my point of view, it makes my job a bit harder, but you can normally sort of decipher some of the gobbledygook that you see in the small print. So Chelsea have taken a huge hit as far as Lukaku's contract is concerned. We don't know how much, and we know that there's been a few other players. I think Ziyech was probably somebody that they might have written down, Kepa as well. But £76.7 million is the biggest write-down of player signings I've ever seen. Now, we then enter the world of football politics. The 2022 accounts at Chelsea were the first under the Clear Lake Bowley regime. And what they might have wanted to do is to say, we inherited a load of players that weren't very good, and it's all Roman Abramovich's fault. So therefore, we're going to effectively say that this write-down's to do with him. And we have seen an awful lot of finger-pointing from the new owners at Chelsea with regards to that, which could, of course, result in charges being instigated against the club.
I understand what profit is, Kieran, but profit on disposal?
Profit on disposal, it's calculated as let's say you sign a player for £50 million on a 5-year deal, and you sell that player with a year left on the contract because you fear he's going to go on a Bosman. So what will happen then? You'll say, well, the value of the player is the original cost less 4 years' worth of amortization, because you've had 4 years' worth of his services. So that would have been four amounts of 10 million. So that would be 40 million. So the accounting value of the player is 50 less 40, which gives us a figure 10. Let's say that you sold that player for 15 million. You'd say, well, we've sold him for 15 million. In the books, he's valued at 10. So therefore, we're going to register a profit of 5. And intuitively, that seems really dumb because people will point out, well, we bought him for 50, we've sold him for 15, surely that should be a loss of 35. Common sense and accounting doesn't go together when it comes to football players and transactions. And that's why we're seeing such an emphasis on clubs now trying to sell academy players, because they're always in the books at a value of zero. So anything you get for them is pure profit.
Right, I got you. I started writing that down, Kieran, and then I couldn't keep up. I had to learn shorthand. Kez Hawkins has our next question. It's a great name. I'm assuming that Kez is a nickname because he's got the word hawk in his in his surname, unless his parents did indeed name him after one of the most overrated films ever made.
I like Kez.
You see, we'll have this argument on another day. Kez and With Nell and I are two of the worst films ever made that somehow people think they're just going to raptures. Ali just can do huge chunks of With Nell and I. I was going to say dialogue, but I'm not going to credit it with that. Anyway, my film peccadilloes we're not here to discuss, Kieran, but Kez has a good question. And Kez's question is, my question is about the trophies clubs win for finishing first in the Championship and Leagues 1 and 2. Is there one official trophy that the club gets to keep and then a few replicas made for presenting on the day? How many trophies are made per season for each league and how much does the actual silverware itself cost? And is it the leagues themselves that pay for it or is there a contribution from the FA? Also, I did think about asking somebody at Palace about this question but then realised they were the wrong people to ask. The cost of treasure. I would say, though, Kez, if you've got some old trophies, then they're worth a fortune. If you can get yourself an original FA Cup from back in the day, you're sitting on millions. So there's a huge collector's market for old trophies. But, yeah, it's an interesting question, Kieran.
It is. Such an interesting question that I had to go to our secret trophy manufacturing contact.
No.
And there was a mine of information. And this is not from Wikipedia. I've spoken to somebody quite high up with regards to this. With regards to the trophies in the EFL, there is only one trophy. And that has to be returned before the end of the following season. And it literally goes from club to club to club. Now, there's nothing to stop a club paying for a replica themselves. But the EFL insist is that if you're going to get a replica of the Championship or the League One, the League Trophy, that it's restricted to three quarters size because they want, you know, so who won it last year? That will be a case. I think was it Burnley last year? They want it to be only seen in one trophy cabinet and to people to see that, you know, the magnificence and the size and the history and the heritage. If you want to go and hand it back and then put one in your trophy cabinet, then the deal is we'll allow you to do that, but it's got to be three quarters of size. It's designed by a company called Thomas Light. Now, I've not been given the actual cost for that trophy by our source, because they felt that wouldn't be appropriate. You know, it's commercially sensitive. If we take a look at the EFL trophy, which I think they've now renamed it the Bristol Street Motors Trophy. We all remember that originally as the Johnson's Paint Trophy. And that trophy has been maintained. The EFL liked the design of it so much, as did the clubs, that whilst the trophy, whilst the competition has been renamed, it's actually the same league trophy. And the same goes for the Carabao Cup. Yeah, that's the original League Cup trophy that was started in 1961. And at the time, it was actually paid for by the president of the EFL, Joe Richards. And I know that the EFL have looked to, you know, from an insurance point of view, to say, you know, if something happens to it, because it's a biggie, isn't it? You know, we've seen it. A new version of that trophy in exactly the same finishings, metals and so on, would cost around about £20,000. So clubs are encouraged to take care of it. So yeah, that's currently, of course, residing at Anfield. I think there's an awful lot of pride taken in these because they are part of the history of the game and therefore they should be protected. So they certainly have value. But it was... It was say that Joe Richards for the League Cup, the EFL Championship. That's all part of, I think, their arrangement with Sky Bet for those particular trophies. But there's one and one only that can be displayed at full size.
I can't remember the circumstances, Kieran, but I once interviewed the chap who engraves the names on the FA Cup, or used to, the that year's winners. I said probably your ideal FA Cup final was QPR v West Brom, so you can just put the initials down, Kenny. He said, no, unfortunately, you have to put the name of the whole team. So Queen's Park Rangers versus West Bromwich Albion is his worst nightmare. This next question, Kieran, comes from Adam Roper. And even Adam himself suggests that it might seem like a weird question, as it did seem when I first saw it. But I'm with Adam that his second instinct that it's not that weird at all. Mm. So Adam says, does an agent get paid any money when a club sacks a manager who is their client? My first instinct is that this would be ridiculous. But if an agent is paid a cut of the manager's wage, then all of a sudden it doesn't seem so crazy. I suppose what Adam's saying is, does the agent get a cut of the redundancy payoff or the sacking money, essentially?
Well, who do you think negotiates that payoff?
Of course.
My understanding is that the agent would get involved. These things are actually sorted out normally reasonably amicably because the clubs don't want things hanging over. There can get complications if an individual's contract involves elements which are success-related or performance-related. And without giving away too much detail, because I have signed a non-disclosure agreement to this effect, I've done some expert witness work, for example, when there's been a dispute between a former employee of a football club and that football club with regards to the extent of the payoff. And then you'd have to say, well, how do we go about calculating? As I've got a spreadsheet or two which might highlight numbers, then that might be utilised in such an arrangement. So the agent is there to represent the interests of the employee, of the manager or of the player, and they would normally go in. You know, first of all, there will be that awkward phone call or that awkward meeting or WhatsApp message or whatever it's going to be. And then the agent, or if the manager doesn't have an agent, the LMA, the League Managers Association, would get involved. And these things, these days, are dealt with reasonably well. If we go back, I can recall around about 20 years ago where there was a particular club which could not afford to pay the redundancy payment, so therefore it simply kept the managers on the payroll and was paying them on a month-by-month basis. And I think this particular club at one point had five former managers on the payroll, as well as the manager in question, because they had a fairly volatile owner who liked to hire and fire and had signed managers on quite long contracts. And that was creating, as you can imagine, quite a lot of fiscal drag as far as the club was concerned, because before you can start to recruit players, we've got five managers who we can't afford to fully pay off, and therefore we know that they're on the hook, or on the hook for those to begin with.
What a great band they were, Fiscal Drag. I'm trying to work out what club that was. We haven't mentioned it before. If you've signed an NDA, Kieran, I wouldn't dream of asking you which club you've been working for. But what I'm going to do is name all 92 teams in the league and see which one you blink at.
I flinch.
I That's interesting, Kieran. Of course, the agent negotiates the redundancy payments, but that implies that occasionally a club might tell the agent before they tell the manager that they're the second, or even they might get the agent to pass on the information to the manager that he's being sacked.
Well, I think what normally happens is the manager is called in and there'll be a quick meeting between owner or chief executive and manager, and then manager will be straight on the phone to their agent, and the club will have said, or the manager says, right, I'm going to leave my agent to sort out the small print,
right, okay.
And the agent works on behalf of the client.
Yeah, because I think most managers are probably sensible enough to realise why they're getting the phone call at 6 o'clock on Sunday morning from the owner, aren't they? Just
Watford's manager was sacked last night, wasn't he?
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was still sulking about Luton scoring in the 159th minute. Ex-Palace player as well then. Valerian Ishmael.
That's right.
He was one of the 2 million quid we paid for him. He's one of the worst buys we ever made. I'm sorry, he's lost his job though, obviously.
Yeah.
Jamie Green has our final question, Kieran. And there seems to be a bit of a theme today about trophies and finals, which,
yes.
as a Palace fan, I find slightly insulting, I have to say, Kieran. Jamie Green says, I have a question about non-league finals day. How is the gate money split among the four competing clubs? Obviously, the FA will take a cut, but is the rest a case of adding up the total gate and then dividing it by the four clubs? Or is there a higher percentage for the FA trophy finalists with the VARs finalists feeding off scraps?
Right. When it comes to football association competitions, it's the FA's responsibility to sell the tickets for the final to deal with the proceeds. But there is a fixed fee. There is a fixed prize for each of those competitions. So if we take a look at the FA trophy, the winners get £60,000 and the runners-up £30,000. Jamie's exactly right that the trophy is deemed to be a slightly more prestigious competition and therefore tends to have bigger clubs and bigger crowds. So we then drop down to the VARs. It's £30,000 for the winners and £15,000 for the losers. And that applies for the FA Cup, the Women's FA Cup and so on. So it's the FA's hit with regards to how the gate proceeds from the final are effectively allocated.
I was going to say, Kieran, £60,000 and £30,000 doesn't seem a lot of money for winning those trophies, but I suppose to the clubs concerned at their level, then £60,000 and £30,000 is a considerable sum, isn't it?
Yeah, we've just seen Liverpool win the Carabao Cup and they've just got £200,000 and the runners-up got £100,000. So you put it in that context in terms of the number of people who will be watching those matches on both domestic and international broadcast deals, and it's okay. The FA Cup final itself, I think it's around about 2.4 million for winning it this year. There is a case for if there's going to be distribution issues, why doesn't more go to clubs in the preliminary rounds? Because it does make, as you say, a much more higher proportionate or percentage difference to their overall revenues.
That would have cheered Todd Bowley up, wouldn't it, on his way home from Wembley after throwing away the Carabao Cup final? He'd have been sitting there sulking and his driver would have gone, 100,000 quid, Governor. It's all right, that'll see us through the next couple of weeks. That would have cheered him up. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution as well, that'd be very kind of you, and it'll get you access to our chat community and our regular quizzes. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you've got a question you'd like answered on the show on our regular Monday questions pod, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com and go to the same website if you want to get one of our books. In the meantime, we should be back on Thursday with our regular news pod. And I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, thank you, as always. Thank you for all the kind messages that I got from people when I was in Rome as well, because it was a little bit unpleasant. Certainly on the first night we were there, I was there with a group of five friends. We were in a bar by ourselves, and all of a sudden, a large group of young men in black decided to wander in. To which our response was to put on a Scottish accent and claim that we were rugby fans. things weren't necessarily as nice elsewhere. So I was really touched by that. There's various ways that you can support the show. And one of those ways is to give us a review. It helps us in the charts. We are a niche show. We know we're not... We're not the big names in the industry, but we do appreciate the comments that are made. By all accounts, it doesn't matter what you say in the review. So you could even say, and personally, and this is a suggestion from a listener, that the show is presented by Joey Essex and the Dalai Lama, and I think that would be a very, very surreal experience indeed.
Yeah. Is this the place to mention that I've met both of those people?
I think it is.
Oh, yeah, I've met both of those people.
That's incredible. Yeah. Not in the same room, I presume.
No, that would have been too much of a to expect. But no, I'll save that story for another time. But the Dalai Lama told me that he chuckled at one of my jokes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. So to which I said, what, in this life? And he didn't chuckle. He found that less chuckle-worthy, obviously. Yeah, I'm not sure Joey Essex has got the attention span, to be perfectly honest. I mean, the Dalai Lama's attention span is much, much greater than Joey Essex's. That sounds like there's two Joey Essexes. That's, thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod. Why did I say that again? We'll edit that out. Bye, everybody.
Bye. The price of football.
Picture this, the roar of a crowd, the tension building, the electrifying moment your team scores the winning goal. Pure joy, right? But for many football fans, barriers can shut them out of that experience. In the UK, nearly 1 in 4 people, that's 16 million, have a disability. And over 70% of those disabilities are non-visible.
Football is naturally inclusive. That seat that you sat on, you can be anyone.
For most people, I'm the first blind person they've ever met. I use that as an opportunity to inform them what I get out of the game and what I get out of life.
Living as a disabled person in this society can actually be quite disabling, quite isolating. Football clubs can have a role in integrating people into their communities.
There's so much that football does for the world. You know, educates, it entertains. Football touches every part of society.
It's about solidarity amongst people from all different groups, from all different walks of life.
Find out how you can contribute to a more inclusive matchday experience for everyone by supporting Level Playing Field, the national charity advocating for greater access and inclusion for all disabled sports fans through its Unite for Access campaign. Unite for your team, unite as a fan. Let's unite for access.